Good evening, and you are very welcome to Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103. I hope you had a great week and you are safe and well as you join us this evening. Well, tonight we are going to be taking a look at returning items that we've purchased, returning plastic bottles. If this sounds like kind of a familiar idea to you, perhaps you've visited the continent at some point, but it's a relatively new one here in Ireland. And to discuss this a little bit further, we're joined by Colin O'Byrne from Voice. Colin, you are very welcome to Let's Go Green.
Aisling, thank you very much for having me. It's my pleasure to be here.
Now, before we get on to your campaign, Return for Change, tell me, first of all, what exactly is Voice?
So Voice is an environmental charity which focuses mainly on aspects pertaining to waste and resources. So very, very interesting stuff. But actually, I'm being slightly facetious, but very important things. Mm-hmm. As you know, we've only got the one planet we live on, so we only have a certain amount of stuff. So we have to be very careful with these resources. Obviously, they're precious. So what Voice does, unlike a lot of other NGOs, it focuses specifically on issues relating to waste and resources. So okay. That's where all our that's where all our efforts go. Voice itself will be celebrating its 25th year in existence later on this year, which is quite a milestone for us. And it came about from the ashes of Greenpeace Ireland. So Greenpeace were here for a while, and they upped and left for whatever reasons back in, I think it was 96, 97. And from them, the people who are still there came up with Voice. So Voice is actually an acronym for Voice of Irish Concern for the Environment. But I think it's handier if we just call it Voice.
Now, Colin, it's interesting, actually, because it actually, you do wonder when you look at, say, larger organisations and you're going, God, yeah, it's just a massive problem. How on earth do you tackle all the different elements? Whereas actually focusing your energy in on waste, in my head at least, it sounds very a logical way to approach things. Now, when I was a teenager, I was very lucky to go on exchange and spend a summer going to school in Germany. And I was very, very quickly educated within hours of arriving on how the recycling system worked, because they had it down to a fine tune, and they didn't want me, the foreigner, coming in and messing it all up. But that was my first introduction to this idea of bringing back, say, we won't name any brands, but like your soft drinks bottle to a location. In that instance, I think it was nearby the local supermarket. You know, it was a very run-of-the-mill, everyday thing that they just did over there without really thinking about it. That was, I'm sorry to say, a long time ago now, because I've left school quite a while. And we've not really gotten there in Ireland. It's not part of our culture just yet, this idea of returning particularly plastic waste. We go and we put it in the recycling, but we don't separate out, say, bottles, for example. So talk to me about this Return for Change campaign.
So the Return for Change campaign was developed by Voice as a result of our current government coming up with, they committed in the programme of government to have a deposit return scheme. Mm-hmm. So this is, I suppose, what you're touching on from your experience in Germany. And that's where certain containers or bottles or whatever have a deposit placed on them at the point of sale. So you go in and you buy a bottle of water or whatever for a euro, say, and there may be a 10, 15 or 20 cent deposit on top of it. You go off with your water, and when it's empty, you bring it back to any shop and you'll get your deposit back. And the placing of the deposit on these containers is there as an incentive to make sure we bring it back. And it's as simple as that. You mentioned that we're sort of lag behind Germany and a few other countries with regard to plastic containers. And that's absolutely true. We do. However, we have had, probably a little bit older than you, myself, Aisling. And I remember the glass bottles being brought back, mm-hmm. for example. And actually, you can go back some hundreds of years. In 1799, Thwaites in Dublin started offering people, I don't know, it's 2 and 6 pence or whatever, to bring glass bottles back. And why were they doing this? Were they environmentalists? They weren't. That term hadn't been coined at all. They were doing it because these are precious resources. It was a common sense approach for them to get these materials back. And that's what the deposit return scheme in Ireland is about. And that's what my Return for Change campaign is about, to make sure people know that this is coming, and know why it's coming. And I've done a few events with this trailer I have. I actually had it down in Abbey Leagues there last week, which has some reverse vending machines built into it, which I'll touch upon in a little while. But I've done a few of these events about the place, and everyone, Joe and Josephine Public in any county I've been in, all think that this is an excellent idea to have a deposit on containers you won't brought back. And they like it because it's a common sense approach. There's nothing highfalutin about it. It just makes sense. You know, you want to get these containers back, you put a deposit on it and you get them back.
Colin, like I should say, I am aware that some retailers operate this themselves. Like I know there's a juice vendor in at Tullamore Food Fair where if you buy a glass bottle of juice, if you bring the bottle back, you get, say, 10 cents off the next time around. I know of a coffee shop in Dublin where you rent the coffee cup for a reusable coffee cup for €1. So there are retailers that are doing this off their own backs.
There are.
We don't have one of your vans in every town square in the country, put it that way.
You do not. In fact, it's the only van of its kind in Ireland. We got the loan of it from England. But what it has, those reverse vending machines I mentioned, they will, I would say by this time next year, be ubiquitous the length and breadth of the country. So a reverse vending machine, briefly, what does it do? Well, it does what it says in the tin. Rather than you getting your money, putting it into the machine and getting the product out, you get your empty product. In our case, it's going to be PET plastic bottles, beverage plastic bottles, and aluminium cans, beverage again. You put them into the machine empty and you'll get the credit out. So that's the reverse element of it. So they will be in probably all the larger shops and supermarkets this time next year. So the trailer I have has sort of promotional display models built into it, just so I can go around and people can play with the shiny new toy. But the thing is, you know, Ashling, very well, the three R's: reduce, reuse, recycle. So recycle is the last one we say. It's at the bottom of the rung for a reason, right? We would much rather that we were reusing or reducing the amount of wastes. Recycling is excellent, right? I'm not poo-pooing it at all, but we can do a lot better. So the deposit return scheme in Ireland, we're starting just with the two kinds of containers I've mentioned: aluminium cans, PET plastic. If we can get that right and get the recycling element of that right, and people buy into it, after a little while, we can look to expand into other containers, and not just for recycling, for refill as well. Like some of the vendors you mentioned in Tullamore or somewhere else in Dublin, we could get the glass bottles back, say. This is just as an example of what could happen. And those bottles could be collected, not crushed down and reformed into new glass, but kept and cleaned and put back into circulation again as a refill element. So the deposit return scheme can include all of those things. It doesn't just have to be recycling. It can be recycling and refill elements also.
How do you envisaging it working? Like I know, and I think I haven't seen it in practice, but I've seen videos of it. I think it's in Turkey where these deposit return schemes or machines, I should say, are at train stations where you can put in, say, your empty soft drink bottle and it'll add credit to your train ticket. So maybe you might be 50 cents short. So you collect up a couple of bottles and stick them in and that's how you tot it up. So how will it work in Ireland? And I suppose the big question, where does the money come from?
Okay, well, so with regard to the machines, I don't know yet because the details haven't been published yet. Mm-hmm. They're still being worked on in the department, exactly how this is all going to shake out. So it could be that the machines, say in your larger supermarkets, you'll receive a receipt or a chit, which you can then take off your shopping expenses in that shop. There's also you could also get an app. It could credit your app. I don't know which way they're going to go on that, to be honest with you. But there are, like you've mentioned, there's lots of different opportunities for getting engagement from the public to get your credit back. In terms of how it's going to be paid for, so essentially it's an extended producer responsibility scheme, much like we. So the producers like Coca-Cola and all these, the different companies who are introducing these materials into the Irish market, which often end up as litter, the onus is being placed on them to make sure they get these bottles into the system and out of the system, right? So they are going to ultimately own the materials when they come through, when they're collected for recycling. And this is how the deposit return scheme is going to be funded. There's three funding streams, essentially. The producer input fee, so all producers must be part of the scheme and they pay into it.
Okay.
They'll collect those materials at the end And then they will own those materials for sale for recycling. And the third stream is, let me say, oh yeah, unredeemed deposits. So even in the best systems in Europe, like in Norway and in Germany, you might have 5%, 6% of the bottles and cans aren't collected for recycling. So those deposits haven't been redeemed. So those deposits will go back into the system, into the scheme again. So that's how it works with the three streams.
And can we be confident, and I do apologize for the dog barking in the background, the joys of recording your radio show from home. Can we be confident, and I'm not saying for a second or suggesting for a second that anybody would take this money and spend it on what they want. But I think sometimes, like if we look at the likes of motor tax, and we pay money to run our cars on the road, and that money is not necessarily ring fenced to improve the quality of our roads. And here in the Midlands, we're very familiar with, and even in Dublin city centre, I have to say, with large potholes. I'm just wondering, like, will this be regulated, that the money, that the deposit that these producers, that they do sign up, and that the money does go back into the scheme?
It's going to be very well regulated. I don't know, again, because the final drafting hasn't been published yet, I can't tell you exactly how it's going to shake out. But the department will be making sure that maximum pressure is put on the producers to make sure that the scheme is as efficient as possible. Ultimately, the reason we're bringing this scheme in is to get us in line with the EU Single-Use Plastic Directive, which says we have to get 90% collection of plastic bottles for recycling by the end of the decade, right? And the deposit return scheme is the most efficient way of doing that. So the government is beholden to those EU regulations, and they're coming down very hard and making sure we have the system to do that. So that's their driving, I suppose, that and the environmental concerns or whatever. But they're going to make sure that we are, you know, we're party to that, and we keep our side of the bargain up. If the collection rates go, you know, below 90%, or we're not hitting what we're meant to be doing year on year, then there will be fines, I would imagine, being levied on producers. There'll be some mechanism to sort of get them in line to make sure that the system is fit for purpose, because it's expensive. It's taking a lot of effort. It's not expensive to the exchequer, I should say, but there's a huge amount of effort going into it. And if we're not reaching those targets, we'll know we're not reaching targets, and the finger of blame will only be pointed in one direction, and it's at the producers. Also, there's the sort of corporate image sort of aspect to it. They want to look like they're doing a good job. They want to be seen to be socially responsible, environmentally responsible, and all of that. That's important for corporations. You can be as cynical as you like about it. A lot of us are. But it's important to them that they look good, whether it's for just sheen marketing purposes or whether it's actually for real purposes.
It strikes me that it's going to be very important where these machines are placed. Like, with the best will in the world, I think we've all had a situation where we have a bag or a bucket full of glass to go to the recycling centre, but the recycling centre is the other side of town. It's not necessarily on our daily commute, and it could be sitting at the back door or even in the boot of the car for weeks on end before we eventually get there. Whereas these deposit return machines, if they're placed in locations where we frequent, if not weekly, if not daily, at least weekly, then you're likely to see people actually buying into it and doing it.
Oh, yeah. And these machines are the machines I have are in the trailer. The machines that will be in the shops, they'll be stationary. They'll be fitted into all the larger supermarkets. But it's not just machines. Every retailer, big or small, that sells PET plastic bottles or aluminium cans will be part of the scheme, and will be obliged to take back empties. Okay, so that could be
every
your local
retailer.
Shop.
So yeah, even like your local petrol station.
Even like your local petrol station, right? Now, they won't have to have the machine. So they'll have crates. Now, again, if I look at what happens across Europe, say I've mentioned Norway already. Norway, my figures aren't exactly right, but it's something along the lines of, I think it's 16% of outlets have reverse vending machines. But those reverse vending machines account for 90-some percent of the collection, which translates as, it's not going to be too onerous on the local shops. They'll be obliged to take it in, but most people seem to bring them back to the supermarkets, to the machines in the supermarket when they're doing their weekly shop. They bring the empty bottles and cans with them, throw them in there. Much like plastic bags. Once the plastic bag tax came in, we all of a sudden, most of us, started bringing our own plastic bags or our own cloth bags or whatever. And I see the deposit return scheme working like that. We just bring the cans and bottles with us. It becomes part of our shopping routine.
Now, this van that we have mentioned, tell us about it. What's the idea behind it?
Well, the idea behind it is, who doesn't like a shiny new toy to play with? So, and this is a shiny new toy. Like I said, this is the only one in Ireland. It's a just trailer, and inside of it is four reverse vending machines, two on either side. And so what I've been doing is I've been going to events, oftentimes in concert with community groups. So what I want to do, as well as raise awareness about the deposit return scheme, I want to show people how the benefits of it can stay within the community. So that could be like, you could save all your bottles and cans, and rather than you bring them to the shop, you could give them to the local GA club or Tidy Towns group or something like that. So the events I've been doing, I've been working with local community groups and businesses. So the local businesses have committed a certain amount of money to a GA club or a Tidy Towns group or wherever. And then we have lots of the volunteers from those groups come out, help us do a litter pick or bring their own cans. They bring them back to the trailer, put them into the machine, and then I would have a local, either the local council or a local waste management company come and collect those materials for recycling. So we sort of, we close the loop, show how everything is quite circular and how the benefits can be kept within the community. So that's what I've been doing with the trailer. And Abby Leakes last week, I had the great fortune to meet a huge amount of the Tidy Towns groups from all over Laois. They were all there in the Abbey Leakes Manor Hotel, so I got to speak to them about it. They got to use the machine. And when you think about a Tidy Town group and all the work they do, how many volunteer hours go into a litter pick over every year? Quite an amount, right? And if you look at, do a waste characterization study and like just break down all the different materials that they're picking up, again, a huge amount of them are plastic bottles and cans. So if all of a sudden those plastic bottles and cans have a deposit or a bounty on their head, if you like, you're not going to be seeing them lying around the road, because that's all of a sudden money on the road, albeit shaped as a bottle or can. So I'm thinking the enterprising hordes of children up and down the country, scouring everywhere, picking them bottles and cans up, bring them off so they can have a bit of pocket money. So that means the Tidy Towns groups don't have to pick them up, so they can have those volunteer hours for doing something else. Maybe they're greening a place or upping the biodiversity quota of a place, you know, this kind of thing. So that's some of the benefits in the community again there. And also, the place looks better. It's not littered as much.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there. I think there's going to be plenty of youngsters and teenagers out walking the highways and byways and collecting that, especially if there's a bit of a extra pocket money in store. And I suppose, look, you know, we all learn things best when we learn them young. So it's no harm at all. Well, listen, Colin O'Byrne from A Voice, thank you so much for talking to us tonight about the Return for Change campaign that you've organised. And indeed, our plans for a deposit return scheme for Ireland at long last. It's been a pleasure speaking to you this evening.
Thank you, Ashley. And I could just say that this is meant to be kicking in now by the end of this year. So the Department of Environment are going full speed at it, and hopefully it'll come in. And also, if anyone wants any more information, returnforchange.org is the website there. Thank you, Ashley.
Well, Colin, thanks for joining us tonight on Let's Go Green. And we will certainly be watching this space. I'll be back after the break. You're listening to Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103. I hope we find you safe and well this Monday evening. So what do you think? Do you think it's about time that we have this deposit return scheme in our shops? Like, I mean, it makes sense. I do wonder why it's taken us so long. I suppose we need to get the manufacturer's buy-in like anything else. But certainly be interesting to see if we are as successful with it as other countries who have been doing things like this for years, like Norway and Germany, as I said there in our chat with Colin. So if you'd like to find out more, just Google the Return for Change campaign. And as Colin says, him and his van will be doing the rounds between now and the launch of the scheme proper to give us some insight into how it will all work. Going to take some music now, and this is a new one on me. It's a Belfast-born singer-songwriter Winnie Ama, and Here I Go, nice and upbeat for the start of the week. You're listening to Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103, and I hope you've been enjoying our show so far this evening. Well, we are turning from recycling to flower farming, and we are now joined by Anna Brown. Anna Brown is a flower farmer herself, and is also a member of the Irish Flower Growers Association of Ireland. Anna, welcome to Midlands 103.
Thank you, Aisling.
Now,
happy to be here.
I I have to say, I adore getting a bunch of flowers. I rarely buy them for myself, but I always think it's a lovely gift to give somebody. But it's something that's been on my mind of late, of like, I suppose there's maybe a mindset that we can't grow nice flowers here in Ireland. And we can talk about that a little bit later on. But, you know, you go into the supermarkets or any of our local florists, and what's on offer is beautiful and it's lovely to receive as a gift. But our job here in this programme is to talk about sustainability and the environment and the little changes that we can make in order to make a lasting impact. And the question has to be asked about the mileage, the air miles, the carbon footprint of your average bouquet. And I know it's an issue that you're particularly passionate about.
It is. So I suppose, yes, the carbon footprint of imported flowers is very high. If you're looking, there's some figures have been worked out from the UK point of view, and I'm sure there are probably worse for here. But basically, the carbon footprint of two regular supermarket bouquets is equivalent to a flight from London to Paris. So you're looking at, if you're buying a bouquet every week, you're getting a lot of flights there. You know, people all quite often give up flying because they're concerned with the carbon footprint, but actually imported flowers are almost as bad.
So Anna, talk to me about the carbon footprint of your average bouquet.
So the bouquets in Ireland, the ones that the flower farmers are growing, is very low because generally we're only supplying to people, you know, next door to us. So they're probably less than, you know, a kilogram of carbon. I suppose the other part is, you know, we're thinking about the human race rushing towards extinction. There's two parts of that. There's the carbon footprint, but there's also the whole biodiversity thing. And flower farmers tick both boxes. So while we're giving you flowers that have very low carbon footprint and that are coming locally, we're also growing in a way that absolutely promotes biodiversity. All those lovely visitors that come to our gardens, the bugs and the bees and the butterflies, have been fed, you know, in chemical-free diet. And a lot of us would use regenerative farming practices. So we're actually nourishing the soil. So while we're growing in a way that's very sustainable, we're actually putting stuff back into nature. And, you know, if you're talking about recycling, we're probably recycling all of our food waste and all of our, you know, the greens that we use and so forth. That all will go back into the ground to feed the soil. So there's lots of boxes being ticked by a flower farmer.
What exactly is regenerative farming?
It's looking at ways where you're not trying to bring too much in from outside and you're not taking too much out. So as a regenerative farmer myself, like, you know, I would try and compost all my waste that I could have. So I'm putting that back into the soil. I'm looking at it from the holistic point of view in terms of, you know, what other creatures are living and, you know, working with me, the whole ecosystem that I'm involved in. Organic farming would be quite often regenerative, but the regenerative way of looking at it, you try not to bring in too much external things into your system. You're trying just to make it all work as it is.
And then, like, I suppose there might be an attitude that, you know, as I said earlier on, that, well, if I want my bouquet of magnolias for my wedding in so many months' time, the only way to get that is through imported flowers. And I'm wondering, is that mindset changing at all?
It is. Quite often, if you look at the Flower Farmers of Ireland Instagram account, you'll see photographs of beautiful weddings, and people are choosing to use greenery in the winter. You know, they'll use a lot of eucalyptus and other beautiful greenery that smells gorgeous and looks really nice. And it's a very stylish choice to make. And then, you know, when you get into kind of April, May, and on the way on to October, you know, you actually have gorgeous different flowers to use with a huge, enormous palette and just, you know, gorgeous colours and also just looking so fresh and smelling wonderful. A lot of the imported flowers don't actually have any scent, but you can be guaranteed if you buy from a flower farm, you're going to get flowers that smell amazing. And scent is something that connects with your emotions, you know, really greatly. So you'll have that scent then that reminds you of your wedding day or your occasion, you know, for years to come. So I think there's, you know, there's great alternatives, and people are starting to see that this is a good way to go. They absolutely don't want to, you know, as part of their consumption for a wedding, destroy the environment while they're doing that.
And you're right there about the scent of flowers. Like, anytime I smell lavender, I think of my grandmother because it was her favorite color. It was her favorite scent. And straight away, when the lavender comes into bloom in the garden, immediately, like, you know, my Granny Alice is in my mind. But what about the practicalities? Because there might be the cynics listening going, yeah, that's all very well and good, but the weather here is not to be relied on. And if your crop doesn't grow in a particular year all that well, and, you know, like the things like weddings and corporate events, they need to be able to rely on high quality produce every year.
And the flower farmers would be very good in terms of, we don't grow monocultures, which is also very good for sustainability. We will grow a great variety. So, you know, we'll put in, we're always playing with different flowers. We love our seeds. We love that kind of stuff. So you put in enough flowers that something is bound to work out. And the brides that we're finding that work with us, the people that work with us, they're kind of coming to us with more of an idea of a color palette, not an exact flower, not an exact color, but something that's, you know, they know that they want the local flowers, they want the Irish flowers. And they'll say, like, you know, pinks and blues, or they'll say, you know, whites and purples or whatever. And, you know, even if we can't do it ourselves, we'll find somebody else who grows flowers who'll be able to help us out with that if we're stuck. So I think the supply is there. You know, we're actually, and Irish weather actually isn't that bad. I actually dip in the cold waters of Loch Ool here, and it's very rare that you're actually not able to dip because of the weather.
Okay, so you reckon that with the network of Irish flower farmers who are growing across the island, that the supply is there. Then there's the another question I wanted to ask. We see, I think particularly at this time of year, an awful lot of wildflower seeds for sale. And there is this, I suppose, those of us not in the know might see some wildflower seeds for sale and think, oh yeah, aren't they always talking about wildflowers in the media? Oh, I should do my bit for biodiversity. I should buy some of that and I should plant some. I'm wondering though, are they Irish wildflower seeds, or is it possible to figure that bit out so that you can be certain that you are actually planting what's native here?
Well, most likely you're not, in fact. Okay. And to me, the wildflower seeds are one of the best marketing things, you know, that's ever come out, because you imagine yourself, lovely white dress, running around, scattering these seeds, and wildflowers will spring up. In fact, to grow wildflower tomatoes is a lot of work, but in fairness, there are ways to get your wildflowers without doing any work at all. By not mowing grassland, you will actually get wildflowers. And by mowing in September and removing the grass, you'll actually reduce fertility and more wildflowers will grow. There's lots of information available on this on YouTube. I think it's the Irish Biodiversity group. You'll find stuff up there that tells you how to do it. So, you know, one of these things where doing less is actually more. You can buy Irish wildflower seeds from a few reputable suppliers. I know that Sandra Coppola is one of them, but we would recommend that you don't. I mean, for me, I teach people this kind of stuff all the time and I say, stop. You know, there's actually wildflower seeds within the soil bank already. So by not mowing and by reducing fertility, you'll actually find that wildflowers will grow. And so you just kind of encourage them. You know, it might take you a while. It's not going to be instant, but most things that are worth doing in life aren't instant.
So when you say that you might want to encourage them, how exactly would you do that?
So the recommended way, I suppose, I mean, you could go out and take lumps of grass from around them. Reduce fertility by cutting the grass once a year and removing it. You can also buy a kind of a seed that's called yellow rattle and sprinkle that around. That's a parasitic to grass plant. So if you can get that growing, it'll actually, the grass will reduce and the flowers will come on. But that's quite a tricky thing to do. I haven't succeeded that myself and I've been trying a few years to do that. But, you know, I think just even to let them grow and to mow and even to appreciate them, there's a part of us, you know, that looks at a field full of grass and thinks, oh, field full of grass. But if you actually get down on your knees and look at the different grasses, there's loads of different colours. They're quite beautiful. And they'll be full of bugs and insects if you haven't sprayed any pesticides. So, you know, that would be my recommendation.
So talk to me then about being an Irish flower grower. Like, what's your average day like?
I'll pick flowers, I'll make bouquets, I'll deliver them to people. I'll get on Instagram, I will do other promotional things, I'll do a radio interview. It's quite a varied day. But a lot of time spent not that glamorous, quite dirty, hands and knees. with gloves on, you know, but there's no manicures. Quite often my face is quite dirty when I come in. But I suppose it's work that I absolutely love doing, and the delight of seeing, like right now in my tunnel, I have ranunculus and anemones. They're absolutely gorgeous. They're like little tiny roses, the ranunculus. I don't know why somebody could actually resist them because they're that beautiful. So that kind of thing, you know, and there's bees buzzing around in them as well. So that kind of thing, you know, it just delights my heart to see this kind of thing, even though the work is hard, that it's worth it for that kind of a payback.
How did you get involved in it?
I've been growing since I was a teenager. I didn't have any television growing up, and I used to read seed catalogues for fun. So I've been growing for a really long time, but I have been working in IT for a long time, and I got laid off before COVID, and I started to grow at that point then. I'm more of a full time. So I'm back to what I love, I suppose, at the end of my career. But also I feel strongly that because we are headed for, you know, a human race trying to make itself extinct, that I should be doing my part to help that. And like I said to you, the whole biodiversity and climate change and carbon stuff, it's all there in the flower growing. So, you know, I feel like I'm doing it and helping people to understand that it's a big part of what I'm doing.
So then maybe if you're listening to our conversation tonight and you're thinking, okay, well, I do get my flowers every week or every month, or I'm always buying so-and-so a bouquet for her birthday. If you're looking to make a change and perhaps, and I suppose the challenge here is when we even talk about that, like there are plenty of florists in around the Midlands who have been here and working away, their family businesses, they've been up and running for generations. So, you know, people can get quite attached to the person they always buy from. And I wonder, can we see maybe, is there room here for some kind of a compromise where we might encourage florists that are already in operation to start stocking more Irish produced flowers?
Absolutely. I think some of the florists have been interested and have contacted me locally. One of the problems, I suppose, is that when flowers come to you from Holland, they, you know, it's very simple. They just arrive outside your door and it's all good. You may have a bit more work to do to find a flower farmer and to work with them to get the flowers in place. But I mean, a bouquet with even one Irish grown flower is better than a bouquet with no Irish grown flowers. That's my feeling. And the more that we can kind of shift things. One of the issues, we haven't got enough flower farmers growing to supply all the florists who might like to buy as well. So that's the other part. And a lot of flower farmers would do both growing and floristry. So they're probably a lot of what they're growing, they're actually selling themselves. But I think there's an awareness, a growing awareness, and there's a feeling that, you know, that those kind of flowers are the right things to have. So it's just a question of, I suppose we could use some support from Bord Bia and Chagask in terms of, you know, the small farmers becoming bigger at what they do as well. That's you know, I think there's a perception that a lot of flower farmers are women and it's like a nice little lady hobby as opposed to something that actually is quite a good business. So I suppose we'd like to call, you know, for some help with growing our businesses from any supporting authorities.
Anna, in that case, then, is it a market that's waiting to erupt? You know, should we be encouraging budding entrepreneurs to perhaps consider starting their own flower farms?
Absolutely. And you can start a flower farm on very little land. You know, less than an acre will get you a lot of flowers. So I suppose, you know, in terms of return on investment, flowers is one of the most lucrative things you can grow. So, you know, definitely.
You just have to be willing to put the quite physical labor into it.
Yes. Okay. No more than any other farming undertaking. And we see a lot of people who belong to our members who have, you know, they're on farms, you know, and maybe one of the farming people is taking a little bit of space then to grow some flowers as a, you know, a side business to the farm, but turns out to be like, could be the most lucrative thing that they do.
Well, it's very interesting. And I hope we do see more and more Irish grown floral offerings in shops in the not too distant future. As you say, it's one of those industries that actually is doing quite a bit for biodiversity, so should be encouraged. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you, Anna, and I think we'll more than likely be hearing from you once again. We might get you back on maybe over the summer months to talk about composting.
Great. Can I just give you the right web address of the other flower farmers? So flowerfarmersofireland.ie is where you can find your local flower farmer. There's a find a flower farmer on the map. So click on that and see who's local to you that you can get their flowers from if you'd like to get some local flowers.
Well, if you've been interested in the conversation we've been having this evening, please do go and check out flowerfarmersireland.ie, Anna, is that right?
That's right, yeah.
And you'll be able to find your local florist. And I might give a shout out as well to a new book that's been published all about, a floral history book, you might call it. It's Alderborough Nursery, Gishel Offaly, Reamsbottom and Gishel and West Drayton. It's by Anne and Tim O'Rourke. And yes, by the surname, there is a familial connection there. But it's a beautiful book. I'm absolutely delighted and getting my head around at the moment. It's available from Offaly Historical Society there on Bury Quay in Tullamore. Well, Anna Brown, thank you so much for joining us on Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103. We'll be back after the break.
You're listening to Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103. Well, I hope you enjoyed our show this evening. If you want to find out more about the Return for Change campaign, you can look up Voice and find out all about it. And it does look likely that we're going to have a deposit return scheme in our shops in by the end of the year. That's the promise anyway, but at least we can say confidently in the not too distant future. And of course, if you'd like to find out more about Irish native flower growers, you can look up flowerfarmersireland.ie and use the map function to find a flower farmer near to you. Well, that is all we have time for on this week's show. My thanks to my contributors. I hope you have a safe and pleasant week. I'm going to leave you now with Pale Blue Moon and Don't Wake Up. This one has a feeling, I think, maybe a bit of noughties grunge, but maybe that's not your thing. It just sounds brings me back to my childhood. So I thought I'd leave you on this one tonight. So again, it's Pale Blue Moon and Don't Wake Up.